Hello and welcome to another edition of the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Jason Bradbury.
And I'm Susie Perry. I'm very woken up with that intro. We've got a great episode for you coming up today, not just because we have the ninth wonder of the world joining us, Mr. John Bentley, but we're also covering everything that happened at CES. Lovely to see you, John. How are you doing?
Well, it's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, John. We definitely need your support this week as we're bursting at the seams with stuff to discuss after last week's awesome CES in Vegas. So, guys, shall we run down each of our favourite stories?
Great idea. I mean, CES is always so important. I always think of it as Las Vegas's Gadget Show Live.
Yes.
It's, I mean, so that for people that have not been there before, it is like that, isn't it? That's a really good description of it, but on a scale that's hard to imagine. It's just enormous.
Yeah, but before we get stuck into all of that, let's give some love to our partner JBL and our favourite earbuds of the moment, the Tour Pro 3s, and here they are. John, we're still really loving your review on YouTube, and it's the gateway to all the amazing features. One of my favourite things is being able to transmit audio directly from the case using the supplied 3.5mm or USB-C cable, and it's so simple and effective. So it's great for watching TV if you don't want to disturb the neighbours or someone sitting next to you. But personally for me, on flights, I've been using it to watch the in-flight entertainment. And it's great because you don't have to keep changing headphones, and they're far more comfortable than the ones you get on a plane anyway.
Yeah, so you can use plug in through the 3.5mm socket on the plane and then have the sound wirelessly beamed to you and your JBL earbuds, which, I mean, the first weekend I used these earbuds, we actually were renting an Airbnb and everyone had gone to bed, and I could was hoping just to rely on the TV having Bluetooth, but it didn't. But what I was able to do was plug in the case through the 3.5mm and then get the sound sent to me by wireless through the earbuds. They sounded great, and I wasn't disturbing anybody.
So if you want more info on the earbuds, check out John's epic review on our YouTube page. And if you want to buy a pair, of course, get clicking on the link in this episode. And what better place to start than a few comments from our Gadget Massive.
Okay, let's kick off with TTKG1CD. He says, this is the best start to my 2025. I was randomly Googling the Gadget Show a few days ago after watching a few CES tech videos with no expectation that anything new from the Gadget Show would be found. But holy moly, you guys are back and I'm so happy. I don't know why I'm doing it in a bit of American accent, but anyway. The format that you had on the Gadget Show was like nothing else. A lot of YouTubers just don't do it the same. I'm hoping that your YouTube channel will have a great format and keep me updated with all the tech that's coming. Well, we hope so too.
Yeah, we're as excited as you are. And this comment has come from GeForce UK. They said, I'd love to see a Steam Deck 2 which works with a Meta Quest. That's actually a really good idea, and not that strange actually, because as you know, Valve have form with making high-end VR devices. And the idea that the next Steam Deck could be powerful enough for you to have a kind of attached or wireless headset that goes with it, giving you kind of VR on the go, is a really sexy concept. So, yeah, interesting. Watch this space.
I've got one from Alex Pro 60798, which is, it's the Gadget Show back on telly this year. Well, the successor to the Gadget Show, which is slightly different, but which I'm still working on, called Shop Smart Save Money, is definitely on telly. We're coming back later on in the year. But not necessarily the Gadget Show itself. Do you have any news on that, Jason and Susie?
Nah.
I think we both feel like, you know, you have a window of opportunity, and that was ours. And
that was it.
You know, maybe now. We always thought we were pretty cutting edge at the time. It's where you could see things first. Obviously, the whole world has changed now, and you get a bigger reach online as well. So we are doing this in vision and audio only. So this is us. This is the Gadget Show now as a podcast.
It is.
We hope that, you know, we can be sort of newsworthy and bring you things and not wait too long. And it's a lot of fun, the Gadget Show, back in the day. But I think that's probably where it has to stay, back in the day.
Well, consumer tastes and audience demographics have demanded a change, haven't they? And television now, I think it's fair to say, appeals to an older demographic. And then new and old Gadget Show viewers want stuff more immediately. They want it on platforms that they can access really easily on their phone and all the rest of it, and that's podcasting and YouTube That's where it's at. That's where it started to go. And personally, it's one of the reasons why I decided to leave the Gadget Show, is because I felt that's where it was going. And I'm just so happy that we're back with such an immediate way of delivering content, like today's show, which of course is as up to the minute as we could get it, with getting us all together with our big CES 2025 report.
Yeah. So that's where we are with that. I've got one from Connor Matthews, who's one of our patrons. He says, excellent as always. Now, I'd like to hear Jason's personal experience with the different campaigns that the Gadget Show launched to do with broadband, like the Up to Speeds campaign and the nationwide free Wi-Fi one. We did really go large on these, and he seems to remember you going to Downing Street at one point, which I remember as well. And we did really kind of encompass everybody's views and shine a light on things that we thought possibly weren't fair to the consumer at the time. And you know, I don't know whether it particularly rattled anybody at Parliament, Jace, but
I think it probably did, you know. I do, honestly.
Sorry, I remember doing an interview with the marketing manager, I think, of Sky at the time about the Up to. You know, we had a real problem with that because we said it's just to get out of jail card free, you know, it can be anything, Up to. So then I had to work with her at BT Sport a few years later and I sort of apologised for my harsh.
A bit awkward.
It was fair. Yeah. No. Yeah, she was great.
No, it was good. I think back then as well, it pertains a little bit to the previous question, actually, the previous comment, that no one was representing consumers' views around tech like we did. There was some stuff on the BBC, but basically I think we were probably the best known tech brand on television. And so when we went to Downing Street, and I remember going to some big office in Westminster and handing, I'm pretty sure it's a big wad of paper, signatures. I can't quite remember, but I remember something physical, and I sort of took it to reception and dumped it there. I think it would have had an effect. They never contacted us back and said, thank you so much for drawing this to our attention. But I think the point was made. But it's lovely. I'd forgotten all about that. So thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. It was good memories.
You need people to shout about things sometimes just to keep everybody in check, I think. Well, thank you for your lovely comments. And we always love to read them. So please do keep them coming. Right, we're going to move on now to some juicy CES news.
I mean, I couldn't help noticing this year at CES, there's an awful lot of smart glasses about, of varying degrees of sophistication. And one for me stood out, and I'd be very interested to know what you think about these, Jason, because you are the most discerning glasses wearer I know, potentially, in terms of...
Although Susie's representing today.
I mean discerning generally, I mean discerning as regards... I think I'm going to dig myself a hole here. Anyway... the ones that struck my attention were the Halliday AI smart glasses, which they've got this tiny little like dot display that's built into the frame over your right eye. It sort of projects out the equivalent of a 3.5-inch screen on into your field of view. They don't have cameras in, so you don't have to worry about some of the negatives are with some smart glasses, you know, that people think you're going to be endlessly taking pictures of them and stuff like that. So what they seem to be designed to do is to give you sort of AI style extra information in your life and make it better as you wear these glasses. You can put all the prescription sort of lenses in them as well. And
cool.
They claim to give you proactive AI assistance wherever you go. And things like real-time translation. Slightly creepily, they say that the microphones in them can listen to people's conversations and fact-check it while you're speaking to them, which I'm...
Oh, I thought fact-checking had gone out the window, John. I thought that was all very 2024.
Yes, I think you could be right there. So this could be a negative for them in the market. But they're controlled by gestures on the... you know, the things that stick over your ears, whatever those basic glasses are called. Anyway, and you can navigate through functions with that. I think aesthetically they don't look too bad, actually.
They look good. Feeling. Yeah. Mm.
So the cost, $489 apparently, launching later this year.
Am I right? And also saying these are the ones that do the sort of real-time translating as well.
Yes, which is becoming a thing. AI's got to say now that real-time translation really does exist. I was listening, there's a radio website that you can put in you say you wanted to. I was listening to some French radio. You'd listen to France Info on there, and it'll translate it into English in real time, which I think is means that the real time translation has really sort of reached a certain level. Anyway, these can do it in your glasses, which could be handy. I mean, because
they sound like the kind of glasses that we talked about years ago on the Gadget Show. I would like to try those. Because they don't sound like they're too invasive in people's privacy, but they are helping you. I'd love to give them a go, actually. They're slated to come out later this year, is that right?
Yes, yeah, that's right. And in fact, at CES, they were already offering a discount if you were an early buyer. So they were about some. But I suppose that is a bit worrying, always buying things before. Yes, as we've touched on before.
I just wonder about the actual use beyond novelty value of these, you know?
Yeah.
I've still, you know what I mean? Like, we've tried the various ones that have come along, the Meta glasses, which we featured in an early, I think, was it the first?
Yes, episode? These are a bit lighter than those, which is actually handy, I think.
Yeah, they are super light, aren't they? 35 grams, so they're without a doubt the lightest. Lovely sort of retro vintage frame, and not unlike yours, Susie, which I have to say are absolutely fabulous, by the way. For those of you not watching this podcast but listening to it, they are gorgeous. But just whether they deliver service.
It's just how well do they work? That's why I would like to try them. That was my sort of point of I'd like to test them. I'd like to give them a run and see what they can do, how helpful it is, or whether it's glitchy and, you know. But if they're coming to market, you would hope that they'd resolved any issues. But who knows? Let's try and get a pair in for a later episode and see if we can give them a run.
Love
it. For me, one of the standouts at CES was... Adam.
That's not the porn show over the road, is it?
That's instantly what came into my head. He's a robot bartender, Adam. So they're designed by Rich Tech Robotics. It's an AI-powered mixologist, and it's been turning a few heads while it's been shaking the old cocktail. So Adam can mix, pour, and serve drinks with impressive flair, all while interacting with customers using his humanoid design and touchscreen interface, if you will. So imagine a bartender that never forgets your order and can serve a perfectly crafted margarita in under 60 seconds. But, you know, it's not just about the drinks, because Adam's fully customizable. It makes it ideal, I suppose, for bars and restaurants, but also high-end events and corporate things and things like that. You don't have to tip him. You can if you want to. It's a kind of really good example, I think, of how robotics and AI are stepping into hospitality, maybe, and blending innovation with a bit of fun. You know, and if this is a sort of future night out, it sounds like it could work in certain environments, although
Sorry, I really blatantly just butted in there. I'm saying you could build a business around it, couldn't you? You know, if you've got a bar in a high street in Birmingham or wherever, you could invest in this technology and you can build an entire brand around that experience.
You could do, and here's the thing. You know, when you go to a bar, what's annoying? Waiting for a drink. It's waiting all the time for a drink. So if you're in a busy bar and you've got, you know, maybe Adam and Adam 2, so getting some drinks going, and you've got the human interaction, because you want to have a bit of a flirt with the mixologist, don't you?
So I was like the tech ambassador, was my title, for a cruise ship, Royal Caribbean, back in the day.
What? And I didn't know about this one.
Yes, my job was to kind of do a speech and welcome journalists aboard this super duper new state of the art cruise ship that Royal Caribbean launched. It was a really great gig, actually, because I got to bring the kids and my wife with me, and we had a bit of a cruise and all that. But why am I telling you this? Because the best thing on the whole ship, and it had like skydiving on board and stuff in one of those tubes. It was really cool. But the coolest thing was the cocktail bartender, and it was a real attraction. Like, everyone on the ship wanted to go there, and there were queues of people just wanting to order from a touchscreen and then wait patiently while their version of Adam, whatever it was more like an industrial robot that had been designed for the purpose of mixing drinks, made you a lovely drink. I think there's real novelty in this. It's quite charming. I think it's exciting. I don't know what the consumer version would be, though. I quite like the idea of having that in our kitchen and doing the washing up. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, you can see places for Adam, but I still think you need a real Adam. I've got a friend called Adam, actually, who's a chef, and he can mix a margarita in under a minute, but you can have a chat with him, you know, and it's quite cool. Yeah. So,
I tell you what, though, Nvidia grabbed headlines, didn't they, at the beginning of CES with, well, I mean, so many announcements, but the RTX 50 series of GPUs, that's really, really exciting. They also caused a little bit of controversy, and I'll put that in context. So first of all, they announced the 50 series, so the 5070, the 5070 Ti, the 5080, the 5090 graphics cards. Why are they important? Because they're just phenomenally powerful, to the extent that you can now, when they release them, pick up a 5070, but get 1490 performance from it for $500. And if you're a gamer, that will make a lot of sense to you. If you're not, it just means that the previous or the current, let's say, I mean, this is arguable because Nvidia aren't the only graphics card company in the game, but it's one of the most powerful cards on the planet right now, the 4090. You can get that in a different format for $500. I mean, that is absolutely astonishing. And then it went right up to the 5090, which is their top-end card, coming in at a whopping $2,000. But that caused a little bit of controversy because some of its graphics gains come thanks to AI-driven cloud computing. So they're kind of doing the upscaling thing. So that's, and a lot of gamers were like, oh, I'm not sure I'm convinced by this, because what they want is kind of hardware that, you know, delivers localized compute, so it generates pixels inside your hardware. You're not going to a cloud solution to kind of crunch that data and improve it in a way that feels a little bit like a magic trick. Does that make sense? But the other thing I was really excited about, Susie, was their Cosmos platform, which is a kind of virtual world, an AI-powered virtual world.
Yeah.
Where you can train robots in a virtual sense. So you can, let's say that you want a rock climbing robot, for example. I've just made that up, but let's say that that's a thing, like to rescue people that are trapped on a mountain, let's say, right? You could, obviously, you could physically make a robot or a series of different designs, and you can take them to the Alps and you could physically do it, right? But what's much better is to put them in the Cosmos platform, as envisaged by NVIDIA, and have infinite different designs doing infinite rock climbing scenarios over and over again, 24/7, in a sort of multi-agentic sense, meaning several different scenarios all being trained at once, so that when you finally end up with a robot, in the real sense, you actually physically manufacture the robot, it's already got all of that training behind it.
So it's like all the sort of training that we need to get autonomous cars off the ground for real, which, you know, which always seems to be just around the corner, but isn't. But it could be there with this, perhaps.
Well, yeah, and of course, self-driving cars are robots, aren't they? In any definition of it. Susie, I sense that you're kind of thinking Terminator.
Well, it's always at the forefront of my mind. No, I can see so many good uses, but I always also see the bad uses as well. But, you know, you can't go backwards, so you have to look at the positives, really, and then control the negatives, I suppose, with something like this. But, yeah, it's mind-blowing when you start thinking about it. Don't you agree, John? Don't you think, you know, to be able to train endlessly like that in AI and then put it into the real world is...
Well, certainly if you can do it at a pace where it's better and somehow manage to do it better than the real world, well, that's probably a good thing, I would have thought.
The alternative is kind of, you know, autonomous drone delivery systems dropping packages on your head and stuff because they're training and getting it wrong.
Right.
You know, you're driving down the motorway and someone's Amazon delivery drops on your car. Whereas within this environment, it's clearly safer. Although I get your point, Susie, it depends who's got it and what they're training the robot to do.
Always. It's always down to the humans doing the training. But yeah, for now, anyway, at least.
Amazing, amazing stuff, though.
Yeah, incredible. Like I said, really mind-blowing. What do you know about Project Digit? Because there's quite a lot of hoo-ha about that, bringing it back to sort of more of a personal supercomputer idea.
I thought this was really exciting. And I actually thought the presentation of Project Digit by NVIDIA CEO was a little bit like the kind of Steve Jobs first iPhone moment. You remember he said, what did he say? It's an iPod, it's a phone, it's an internet mobile communicator or something like that. He said three things. And then we suddenly realized.
It was one device. Emerged,
It was really powerful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this was a very powerful moment because he was talking on stage about a localized AI computer, just a single computer that can connect to the internet and crunch stuff in the cloud, but is a localized AI, which is very important because not all AI scenarios allow you to connect to the outside world, right? It's what Apple were doing, isn't it, with their launch of their recent iPhone 16s, right? This AI on chip, that's one of the big trends for 2025, and this was their answer to it. But this is a supercomputer in a very, very small and affordable package. And the iPhone moment was when he had an image on stage, and I don't actually know how they did it. It was like a holographic effect of a large computer that he stood next to, and he said something like, wouldn't it be great if it was smaller? And then it literally shrank on stage. And then he put his back to us. There's obviously a bit of magician's trickery. And then he picked it up, and it's literally the size of, you know, of a, like a piece of toast, like a very, very thick doorstop piece of toast, like a small computer, right? And yet this is an actual, you know, sort of Blackwell super chip, supercomputer with up to one petaflop of AI performance. So it's the real deal. And it means that you've got your own AI stack, and you can train it on whatever you want to train it on. So if you run a factory and, you know, even a small factory making, I don't know, T-shirts or something, you could use this localized AI to make your business process much more efficient, for example, and much more complex stuff than that. Like you could use it in a laboratory.
Right.
It's an incredible thing, but I really love the theatricality of the launch.
So it launches in May this year, and the price starts at around $3,000. So, you know, it probably
not cheap.
Packs a lot into that $3,000, but yeah, quite a price tag.
But small business money, though, isn't
yes,
it? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It is achievable. I tell you what, though, if we're talking gaming, we've got to mention the Legion Go S, which I was super excited to look at. Not only is it this gorgeous kind of organic, rounded, edged Steam Deck alternative, it also offers the opportunity to load Steam OS. So it's the first proper contender for Steam Deck's crown, fully licensed by Valve, so they're welcoming Lenovo into the fold, so to speak. There is a Windows 11 version as well, but it was the fact that you can get Steam OS on a Steam Deck-like device with some pretty cool specs that I was really excited about.
Yeah, so if you want to go under the hood just for a quick minute, and then you can explain really what this, how this relates and what this means. And the Legion Go S is powered by AMD's Ryzen processors, and the base model comes with the Ryzen Z1 Extreme CPU, while a higher-end version boasts the exclusive Ryzen Z2 Go processor. Configurations offer up to 32 gig of LPDDR5X RAM and up to 1 terabyte SSD storage, providing ample power and space for modern gaming files.
I'm so excited about this. Can I just jump in, right? The thing is, right, the Steam Deck just changed my life because I was able to take kind of almost AAA gaming along with me to, say, when I overnight, because we're doing the podcast in Birmingham, because obviously I live far away, so I generally stay overnight to do the podcast from Birmingham, right? And I can take my Steam Deck with me. So you'd think, therefore, I'd be really excited that this is the first non-Valve hardware device that you can buy with Steam Deck OS. Actually, I'm more excited at the notion that you can get Windows 11 on it, albeit for an extra $100. It costs you $100 more to get the Windows version than it does the Steam OS thing. So that's a consideration. Because I like to be able to experience the full gamut of games, to have locally downloaded, stored games on the actual device so that I don't have any cloud streaming issues while I'm traveling or whatever. But I definitely want access to Steam, which you can do on Windows, obviously. And I want access to Game Pass because, although having said that, I just got into the Sony ecosystem, but that's another story for another episode. But I'm traditionally an Xbox gamer. This does all of that, and it can do it at 120 hertz. Mm. That is a game changer for me. 120 hertz on a portable device that you can fit in, you can't put it in your pocket, but a large coat pocket. Just, here's my credit card.
So you want that sort of seamless transition, don't you, between PC and handheld gaming, effectively.
I do. I really, really, what I want, if I'm honest, is the Xbox Go S. You know, I want what Lenovo have done here for my Xbox experience. That's what I want.
Inevitably, there were flying cars at CES 2025, as usual. I mean, we've almost had to sort of spend the last 100 years trying to make a flying car. They never work because what you need to make a good plane isn't the same as what you need to make a good car, really. And so you're making your life very difficult and expensive. And you also need a flying license as well. So, and lots of problems. But if anything, XPeng, which is one of those China brands that actually is going to appear on the market in Britain soon. I think they're almost as we speak launching their first cars here. They almost sort of came up with a parallel solution to the flying car problem, which is basically they created a big van which looks a bit like a Tesla Cybertruck. Actually, it seems to be inspired by the styling of that, and they've got their own sort of vertical takeoff and landing aeroplane in the back. So the idea is that you drive where you need to, and then simply get the plane out the back and continue your journey, which is an interesting approach. They talk a lot about the range. I mean, the actual, apart from looking a bit Tesla-esque, it's actually it's basically just a conventional hybrid. The van, I think it's got about 600 mile range, but I think not much of that is on batteries necessarily. But XPeng have been quite got a lot of experience in this in the eVTOL area, so it's possible that it could work. They're expecting, it's called the Land Aircraft Carrier, and they're expecting it'll cost come in under $300,000, Well, they've got 3,000 pre-orders, apparently.
Amazing. Isn't it amazing that people actually get behind these things? Because there must be something that if they've got 3,000 orders. Mm. I mean, the only thing with all of these kind of vertical takeoff and landing solutions that we're starting to see, although I would argue, John, that a lot of them you don't need a pilot's license for, because a lot of them are fully automated, aren't they? So you're just,
yes, there is that. This is likewise.
But yeah, it's the range is the problem, isn't it? Because
yes,
even things that aren't VTOL, like just a prop plane with an electric engine, it can still only give you, like, I don't know what it is.
It often comes out at about half an hour, doesn't it? It seems to be what I'm reading.
Something really unusable for an aircraft. Mm. Yeah, and you don't want to be running out of power at 2,000 feet, do you? You know what I mean? It's not a good scenario, that.
Especially if you're in a rescue mission, which is, I think, what this is targeted for, isn't it? It's going to be exclusively available in China to start with. And it's kind of targeting the, you know, the emergency services and adventure professionals, really, that go out and I suppose are hard to find if they get lost and that kind of thing. You can see that working really well. But the fact that they are launching and are at market, really, is quite interesting, isn't it?
It is. Actually, I mean, it definitely, if we can see it actually happening, and it, as you say, Susie, performing some wonderful role in rescue scenarios, then all of a sudden that becomes well worthwhile and not simply a rich person's toy, which is always another the great problem with the sort of whole flying car thing. You know, if everybody gets one, then the whole skies will be
passenger jet can't take off because some billionaire is transiting the airport.
Yes, we're already there, aren't we? We're already at that market. What do you know about the Richter Skyrider X1, John?
Well, that's another. I mean, there's actually also quite a lot of history of flying motorbikes as well, and this is really rather in that sphere. Again, a combination of vertical takeoff and landing with a motorcycle, albeit with motorcycle with a lot of bodywork. And they claim it. I mean, this seems very ambitious, this one, I think, but because they're claiming full autonomy as well, aren't they? And I think, they're claiming about 40 minutes of flight time, and when you can do about 62 miles an hour on the bike.
Mm. Well, but look, being able to buy something that where you can fly for 40 minutes for $60,000, that's much more achievable, isn't it? That feels more realistic. Like, for example, wouldn't it be great? I mean, look, going by our previous track record on the Gadget Show, okay, bearing in mind where we came from on the show and what we're now using in our daily lives, like with like AI language interfaces where it could write Shakespeare and poetry with a simple prompt, and all that crazy stuff that's going on in gaming, some of which you've covered today, right? Virtual reality, where that's gone, the internet speeds that we can now get, 5G, blah 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 blah. Could I be flying from Cornwall to record an edition of the Gadget Show podcast in Birmingham within the next 2 years? Something like the Rictor Skyrider at $60,000 says yes, because that's the most achievable thing. Whereas the other one, 300 grand, albeit I know you said, Susie, it's only for emergencies, but most of them are in the hundreds of thousands, aren't they? This is actually much more achievable for the every person.
In terms of technology, yes. I think in terms of licensing, etc., when we get to the, nitty, whatever.
The nitty gritty.
Yeah, when we get
not
to
dying.
The red tape, it's probably not going to happen. But but yes, it's interesting. If you go out to the flat plains, I don't know, Salt Lake or something like that, I'd love to have a go on that. We'd be there, wouldn't we, if we were...
But flying to Birmingham, landing in Digbeth.
You'll be getting range anxiety somewhere over Devon.
Yeah. You're so right. It's like my early days of having an electric car. It was just absolutely the most useless thing I've ever bought in my life.
It's when you don't want to be an early adopter, really.
Oh, God. Give it 5 or 10 years, though, and, expect me overhead.
I've got a little one. Hey, so I think it's one of the most endearing gadgets that I saw that was unveiled this year. It's called Mirumi. Did you see that? It's developed by Yukai Engineering, and Mirumi is like a little charming furry robot designed to clip onto your bag or your purse or whatever. And it just brings a little touch of companionship to your daily routine. So it kind of resembles a fluffy creature. I don't really know how to describe it. It's got expressive big round eyes, like cartoon eyes, as you would expect. Long arms that allow it to cling to your bag handle, a little bit like a sloth or a koala bear or something like that. It's got loads of sensors, and it interacts with the surroundings by sort of turning its head to observe passers-by, nodding in acknowledgement, and even displaying like a little bit of shyness, hiding the face if it's approached quickly or... So just quite cute, really. I think a little talking point and quite sweet. It even gets annoyed if if it gets jostled or shaken. So it shakes its head sideways as if to say, oh, please don't do that to me. But it's just one of these sort of cute things, really, that, gets a headline. I think kids would love it. Moms probably, would maybe like it for their kids to distract them a little bit. So it sort of exemplifies a blend of technology and an emotional connection, let's say.
Yeah.
So it's like a little companion that brings a little bit of joy and a bit of a smile, which, my goodness me, I think, we all could do with that sometimes, couldn't we?
Definitely. I saw something called the Chill Shark. I'm a bit of a fan of cold plunges, and sometimes living in Cornwall is out of a choice because it's freezing in the ocean.
Mostly.
Yeah, but I do like a cold plunge. And this is it's kind of like a flexible pad, I seem to remember, and you put it over the side of the bath and you plug it in, which could be a problem. But maybe you don't. I don't know that you do that. I'm going purely from memory here, but it turns your normal bath into a cold plunge. It takes the temperature down to whatever temperature you set. I just thought it was a really good idea, because the alternative to those people looking for that kind of health experience is to buy a totally separate unit that they keep in a room or they keep outside or something. I just thought it was quite a nice idea.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of like, I do that cold water thing as well, but part of the experience for me is actually being outside and doing it outside. So it wouldn't be one to interest me, but I suppose for health benefits, maybe, it could be quite interesting. Well, while we're mentioning health, did you hear all the talk about the Vivu smart toilet? It's as clever as your smartphone. I mean, when you go to Japan, one thing everybody talks about in Japan, right, is the toilets, isn't it? I mean, I lived there in the early 90s and everybody's still talking about it, but they were there then. So what's the deal with this? And, well, Vivu Smart Loo, it takes bathroom technology to a whole new level. It's packed with sensors that analyse your, let's say, your outputs to provide real-time health benefits and insights. So, things like hydration levels, pH balance, vitamins, vitamin deficiencies, and even early warnings of potential health issues. And get this as well, it's all integrated within the Vivu app. So after you've been to the loo, the toilet syncs with your phone to deliver personalised wellness tips, dietary suggestions, and even remind us to stay hydrated and drink water. So actually, that this is really good for older people, because I'm always telling my dad to drink more water, and I know all my friends are exactly the same. And it's designed really with families in mind, if you like. So it can identify individual users through, and I'm not kidding, machine learning algorithms. So, you know, you don't mix up all your poo. Don't know how else to say it, really. But price-wise, it's not exactly, you know, high street price. It's not a budget price. It starts at $3,000. But if you consider the potential health benefits and I'm not going to say it's cool, but it's interesting. It might be worth investing in something like this. The big question is, would you trust a toilet to give you advice? I mean, I'm fascinated, really. What do you guys think about it? I'm sure Gillian McKeith would have been really interested in this one.
Well, I mean, I've been talking about this for years, and I'm being deadly serious. In my futurology speeches, I always have a section about health, and I often talk about how your toilet is the obvious place to analyse what's going on, and then to sync up with other sort of biometrics, biodata, and give you a much more in-depth resolution, you know, in terms of tracking health and where you are on a daily basis. It feels to me that if we're going to solve the NHS puzzle, we need to outsource a lot of what the NHS does, especially for the older generation, Suze, to technology. We need to provide people with technology so that the doctor knows what your heart rate is, or knows what your blood oxygen level is, or in this case, a much greater degree of information around what's going on with your body, so that then they can preempt treatments, et cetera, and that you're not having to go into your local doctors and get it all done and get blood tests done in, stool samples.
Well, yeah, exactly. And we're in a situation, I was just thinking of that, sort of over 50s now, you know, you take a sample, you stick it in a box and send it in the post for it to be analysed. I mean, are we in a situation here where we're getting to the point where, you know, something like this can start to do that for you, which obviously, like you said, Jace, it would be amazing.
And well, didn't the Prime Minister recently make a big statement about AI, which I'm guessing will lead to investment. So if anyone's listening, this is an area that we need a British Elon Musk or whoever you agree with, an innovator to dive into this sector and start the investment money, and the intention is there at government to make this happen. I think this is definitely where we need to go. We need to outsource. We need to take responsibility for our own health, basically, and stop queuing up for hours at the GPs, because it just doesn't work, right? And so I understand there's a cost to this, and I'm no economist. I don't know how it works, whether it's a cheaper solution to do this than it is to localize it to GP surgeries, but it's really exciting, strangely enough. The toilet story is really exciting.
Well, coming back to things we're probably slightly more used to, and there were inevitably new TVs there at CES, and Samsung had one which development which gave you more contrast on the screen. LG had they're now doing stacking their OLEDs so as to make them much brighter, which is a good thing. But they also had intriguingly a 77-inch transparent OLED TV. Now, I mean, we've seen these transparent displays before, but I think they're now sort of ready for mainstream. They're ready to be actually incorporated into TVs. I mean, the idea is you can look at your picture and see what's going on behind it, or not, as the case may be. If you can, there's also a screen that rolls up behind the transparent display. So they're quite expensive. They're not absolutely certain on the prices yet. They're looking at somewhere between $60,000-$70,000, I heard mentioned.
Pricey.
It's certainly pricey, and probably it has to be accepted, probably not actually really quite as good as a traditional TV picture. So you are actually paying a bit of a price in many respects for having it transparent. But it certainly be a very good talking point. And also, I suppose, you can see through it when it's off as well. But also, it's not always on display mode, so you can showcase artwork and so on. I think that's called the T object, and it's also supposed to be completely wireless, so you don't have any cables. It's got a zero connect box which transmits pictures to it up to 4K, up to 120 hertz from up to 30 feet away. Although I presume you still need to plug it in, though, I should imagine.
Yeah, it just feels a bit like, and I'm guilty of being overly enthusiastic about it back in the day on the Gadget Show, but a bit like 3D TV.
Yeah,
it's like, almost like, you know, the shareholders need to do something new every year or every couple of years. So they, but they don't always have meaningful technologies, and it feels a little bit like that. I mean, most people in the UK don't have their telly in front of a window, do they? Or some balcony, like some of the kind of posh images on the Google search that I just pulled up. So I don't know what, I can't really see a use for it.
Unless it's almost in a sort of VR type way. You know,
like
so you could actually put
like
it
a holographic.
In, you put information on something that you're also watching. But then that implies almost you've got like layers of TV, which is something else.
Yeah. I'd almost see more use if you had four of them. You know, you could layer stuff in a meaningful
like
way.
Layers in Photoshop almost, but on a TV. Hmm.
This feels like the perfect moment to mention the Portal Graph. So this is a company specializing in virtual reality technologies that showcased an innovative 3D projection system at CES this year. So the system allows users to experience VR content without the need for headsets. And I watched a few iterations of this on my favorite streaming platform. Obviously the effect doesn't come across when you see it on a 2D monitor at home, but they're emotional reaction to it convinced me that it's definitely worthy of touching on. So it projects virtual environments directly onto physical spaces, creating an immersive experience viewable with the naked eye. So this has been promised, hasn't it? We've come back to that 3D TV thing again. Do you remember that? I remember we went through all of that stuff, and then the next thing was, is there a glasses free version of 3D TV that's convincing? And it seems like this might be it. So just to give you a sort of sense of the meat and potatoes, it utilizes a 360-degree camera to capture and project VR content onto any surface. So this sort of sense surface-aware thing is something that I'm very, very keen on. I mean, it's going to have to go some to beat what is currently delivered by. I'm looking around because my, I don't know where they've gone. My VR helmets are normally to hand in here, but the Meta Quest, for example. You know, it's a very reasonable 400 quid, just over 400 quid. And the mixed reality, what do they call it, pass through on that helmet, can deliver context aware stuff. And it's very interesting to play a board game on your actual coffee table when you can see the lounge and stuff like that. So I'm really interested in this. The system detects the viewer's viewpoint through facial recognition software via a webcam or by using Vive trackers attached to the user's head. I thought we'd done with Vive trackers. So then the visuals, you know, the virtual assets align with the user's perspective, kind of that motion parallax thing. Anyway, I just thought it was a novel approach to VR without a VR helmet. And it's, I don't know if that is a sect. I mean, I don't mind wearing a VR helmet, to be honest with you. They're quite lightweight now and very wearable for quite long periods of time. But the notion of having a kind of augmented, I don't know, front room that you just walk into, it's blooming cool. Really cool concept.
One more thing from me, because we can't have a Gadget Show podcast without, guess what?
An air fryer?
Oh!
Oh, I actually bought one of these for Christmas for my dad. Not this one, but an air fryer. Right, this is the Drio Chef Maker 2. It's an AI-powered kitchen appliance set to revolutionise home cooking by combining advanced technology and culinary expertise. The Chef Maker 2 is a compact device that integrates seamlessly into your kitchen, apparently. It features CombiCook technology, which automates temperature, time and atomization, which apparently delivers perfectly cooked meals with minimal effort. And this technology ensures consistent results whether you're preparing steak, seafood or other dishes. This is what they say. So a standout feature from Chef Maker 2 is its AI chef assistant. So, of course, you know, we're all about AI at the moment. The intelligent system offers personalized step-by-step guidance from hands-off cooking to tailored tips and ingredient suggestions. So, if, you know, if you're not a natural cook, this might be something for you to like take the heat out of everything, excuse the pun, but just lift the load really, and it does all the work for you. And it also supports recipe input from websites and from images or text. It can convert those into cooking programs for the chef maker too, which I thought was quite an interesting thing with it. It's expected to be available in August this year, and we haven't got specific pricing, so I can't tell you how much it's going to be, so we have to hold fire on that one. But with its, you know, combination of AI-driven assistance and automated cooking technology, I think the Drio Chef Maker 2 does represent a significant advancement in smart kitchen appliances. So, you know, we're looking at home technology quite a lot more now, and that's a big growth area, isn't it? So one to watch,
definitely. I just immediately think of the old challenges we used to do on the Gadget Show where we would have AI versus a real chef, and then you'd have, you know, a bunch of tasters, and it would be a blind test. It'd be a brilliant item, wouldn't it, John? Don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
One for when we all get together in the studio, maybe that could be one to try.
I think Otis might put Otis's nose out of joint though, don't you reckon?
Well, Otis will have to be there as well.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. And that is a wrap, a chicken wrap or whatever kind of wrap you want for this episode. Let us know any of your comments, anything in CES that we didn't cover, maybe that, you know, piqued your interests. We always love to hear your comments and your thoughts.
And of course, thanks, John, for joining us. It's been brilliant having you on board.
It was great to be there and here. Yeah.
And remember, if you're diving into more episodes of the Gadget Show podcast, then make sure that you're doing it on the JBL Tour Pro 3s with some of the best sound, adaptive noise cancelling and battery life on the market.
Absolutely. Thanks again, John. Lovely to see your face. And we'll see you all very, very soon.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.